Oh, what an episode of Musings on Golf do we have for you today. Hello, once again, my name is Kelly Elbin, and while my co-host, Bob Bupka, is unable to join us this week, we are able to bring you some terrific stories leading up to the biggest event in celebrity golf from our special guest, Jay Billis, the terrific college basketball analyst for ESPN. We'll also look ahead to the National Championship of Scottish Golf this week at the Genesis Scottish Open. Take a look back at an improbable multiple winner on the PGA Tour. And improbable might not even be the right word, to be honest with you, in regards to Brian Campbell, who won the John Deere Classic in sudden death on Sunday in Illinois. And wait till you hear who our guest is going to be next week as we preview the 153rd Open Championship at Royal Portrush. Okay, let's start a little bit with the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship. I've gotten to know a guy named John Miller. He's a member at the same club where I play golf here in South Florida. And John, longtime programming executive for NBC, is the guy who created the event. 36 years straight now it's run. And it has been such an incredibly popular made-for-TV event. And I think for lots of reasons. And Jay Billis will get into to some of that. Jay's played it many times. You're really going to enjoy hearing from Jay. Super sharp guy. But I think probably first and foremost is the lineup of players, of celebrities who compete in this year in and year out. As an example, this year you've got Steph Curry, Travis Kelce, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, Annika Sorenstam. You throw in little Charles Barkley. You got a lot of fun. Yeah, you've got some serious players, some very talented players playing for $750,000 purse. Annika certainly is the one name that comes out, but you have a lot of former and current athletes and celebrities who can flat out play. But that's really not why this event's been successful. I think people tune in to see names and recognizable faces who they know, and certainly the list with Steph, who he was involved in a little something called the Olympics last year, in leading the U.S. to gold in basketball in Paris, and that's what kept him from playing last year. But to see Steph Curry out there shooting baskets on the beach there in Tahoe, at Edgewood Tahoe golf course in Nevada, to have Travis Kelce and to have, you know, the stars of today, like I mentioned, with Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers now donning the Steelers uniform. It's just a great event. 54 holes, modified Stableford format. It's worked. It's worked in a big, big way. Jay Billis is a really interesting guy. So Billis played basketball for Mike Krzyzewski at Duke on a team that went to the national championship 4 years. Fantastic guy. An LA kid. He grew up outside of Los Angeles and made the decision to go to Duke instead of go down the street and play at Pauley Pavilion at UCLA. And we'll find out, from Jay as to why he chose to do that. But Jay's a lot more. I mean, he made the decision not to play professionally in the United States, or at least pursue the NBA after he was drafted in 86 by the Dallas Mavericks in the fifth round, went and played internationally, then came back, was an assistant coach for the Duke men's basketball program, got his law degree, and he is a practicing attorney. He's not just this guy who's on ESPN calling, as an analyst for games and studio work and so forth, and he's got the title of an attorney. He's very much practicing attorney, and he's got some really interesting stories, one of which has to do with a very famous but a very famous dinosaur who lots and lots of kids grew up watching. So it's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to enjoy hearing from Jay. And then on the flip side, after we come back from commercial, we'll talk about Brian Campbell winning at John Deere. We'll talk about the Genesis Scottish Open and look ahead a little bit to Royal Portrush and the 153rd Open Championship. Heck, it's only been 6 years since they played it in their Royal Port Rush in 2019 for the first time with not Rory McIlroy, but Shane Lowry, another local favorite, coming through with the win. Okay, enough. Right after these messages from our friends at Titleist and William and Harry, you'll hear what I think is a terrific interview with Jay Billis as we preview the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship here on Musings on Golf. William and Harry has entered a bold new era, led by their new Lionhead logo, a symbol of strength, leadership, and fearless ambition. Step onto the course with purpose, outplay the field, and dominate your opponent, while wearing handcrafted shoes that blend performance, luxury, and unmistakable style. William & Harry offers custom designs featuring your club, company, or organization's logo, so you stand out with every step. Visit williamandharry.com and use code 15OFFMOG for 15% off. William & Harry, walk with the lion.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with your wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Well, for the 36th consecutive year, the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship welcomes stars from the sports and entertainment worlds this week at Edgewood Tahoe Golf Course in Nevada. And among those recognizable faces is our special guest today. He played collegiately for the all-time winningest coach in men's college basketball, and he has long been the leading college basketball analyst, at least in my opinion, ESPN. He's also a practicing attorney and a passionate player of the great game of golf. We have so much to discuss with the great Jay Billis here on Musings on Golf. Hey, Jay, welcome to Musings on Golf. How are you?
I'm doing great, Kelly. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, let's kind of get started, Jay. This will be, I believe, your sixth time in playing in the American Century. For you personally, okay, and maybe as well from a broader sense, what is it? What makes this event work? Why is it so special to play in it, to watch it in 36 straight years, and the names of the Steph Currys of the world? This is an over the top success, Jay.
Yeah, I think Kelly, it comes down to the people, and whether it's John Miller at NBC that has been putting this tournament on for 36 years and just an unbelievable person, to American Century, that has been sponsoring this event, and their CEO, Jonathan Thomas. Like, the people are unbelievably nice. The volunteers, like, you go to a tee box, and whether you made a birdie or a double, there's a volunteer who gives you a hug. And, then the fans that are here, it's a relaxed atmosphere. I mean, guys are competitive and they want to do well. I get that, but it's unbelievably fun. And look, everybody gets it. Like, there are some guys here, whether it's Steph Curry or Marty Fish or Mark Mulder, guys like that, John Smoltz, that are competing to win this thing.
Yeah.
And then others that are just trying, like me, just trying to do your best under tournament conditions with the lights on. Because, you know, I have no illusions about myself as a golfer. I know how hard this game is, and I'm just trying to hold myself together for three rounds and enjoy it.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I mean, you're a 4.2 index. What's it like to play in front of crowds? Do you get nervous at all? Did you ever at the start? Is it certainly very different than teeing it up at whatever club you might belong to, right?
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned that. So I was talking with Vince Carter about this. We played in a tournament in Maine a little bit earlier last month, and after we hit our first tee shot, we were walking down the fairway. You know, they announce your names and everything. You have to step up. It gets real quiet. And I told him, like, Vince played in the NBA for 20 years. And was an All-American in North Carolina. And I said, I don't care what level of success you've had at anything. If anybody says they don't get nervous on the first tee of a golf tournament, they're liars. You know, you're kind of shaking a little bit. And I tend to get nervous over little short 3-footers where at home you just knock those things in, and I get nervous out here over those. Instead of thinking about making them, sometimes the thought of, hey, don't miss this, creeps into your mind, which is the worst possible thing.
Right, right. And you mentioned how comfortable it is to play in the event and how much fun. But strictly from a charitable component in regards to this event, this event's raised a lot of money. What, roughly $10 million for the Stowers Institute for Medical Research. I know they do a lot to try to eradicate diseases that touch all of us. So there's a, Jay, there's a massive philanthropic part to this event, right?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Kelly. And that's something that goes straight to American Century Investments and to Jonathan Thomas and the culture of that company. American Century donates 40% of their profits to medical research and bloodborne diseases. And like, as you said, things that affect all of us. And that's extraordinary. Now, if anyone else is doing that, I haven't heard about it. And I'm blown away by the culture of that organization and the leadership of that company and the people. That's one of the things about this tournament that's so great, are the American Century people. Like, they're so nice and so generous, and it's, there's such an amazing spirit. That's the thing that draws, I think, everybody back here. You know, all the players in this tournament can play, you know, a lot of them can play just about anywhere they want. And everyone treats the invitation to this like they got invited to the Masters. And I, you know, like I'm sure it's pretty soon they're going to be going, hey, you know, we've had enough of Billis. Let's get him out of there and get some new blood in there. And I'm sure that I'll need therapy whenever I get bounced out of this thing, because it's such a thrill when you get the invitation.
It's interesting to equate that with the Masters, but you're really not far off. It's that level for those participating. It's that special, right?
It is, and for all the reasons we've talked about, like, the competition's really fun. It's really fun to try to test yourself and you know, there's friendly competitions in it. It's great. Everybody wants to do their best, but everybody also gets it that we're not real golfers. But we love it. Like, you know, nobody's cornered the market on love of the game. And like, I hope this story makes sense. But when I finished playing, I played professional basketball overseas. And when I started working as a lawyer, I'd go play basketball at lunch, try to get a run in and get a sweat up and stuff. And there were guys that played every day there, and they were not very good. And I remember thinking, like, how can these guys play every day when they're so bad at this? And then I started playing golf and I got it. Then I understood, like, you know, you don't have to be good to love this game. And once you hit a good shot, you are hooked and you're craving, you're addicted to wanting to do it again.
All right, so let's talk about that in terms of your entree into the game. Obviously, we know about your on-course successes at Duke, your years at ESPN, but golf-wise, how'd you get started?
I grew up in Southern California, and my dad was a member at a place called Rolling Hills Country Club. And my brother was a really talented junior golfer, played in college, and he and John Cook used to play against each other at that club. And I'm 7 years younger than my brother. So when my dad would take me to the golf course, I just didn't take to it, honestly. It felt like somebody was always telling me to be quiet and don't walk here and don't do this and all that. So I kind of turned away from golf, and I really regret that now. And not because I would be a better player now, I probably wouldn't be, but, because golf teaches so many lessons about how to deal with failure. I wish I would have learned those lessons earlier to be able to move on to the next shot and just let go what just happened, positive or negative. I can do that in other things, but it's harder for me to do that in golf. Like, I could have 7 really good holes in a row and I blow one out of bounds and I carry that with me for the next 5. And I don't know what that is, but I really have to fight it. But I picked the game up for real when I was about 28 or 29, when all my friends were playing and I wanted to join in. And once that started, I couldn't stop playing. I just, now that I have more time, It's an every day that I'm free, I'm at the golf course, either hitting balls for a while or going out to play with my friends. I joke with my friends, like, if I didn't play golf, I don't think I'd have any friends, because I don't gamble, I don't stay out late at night. But golf is the thing that brings all our friend group together.
And that's true. I mean, the social component of the game, Jay, can never be underestimated, right?
Yeah. And you don't, you know, when I tried to play tennis for a while, if you're not playing tennis against a person that's the same level as you, like sometimes I play against players that were much better and I'm thinking this can't be any fun for these guys hitting with a schlep like me. But then when you play golf, like you can play with a plus four and be a 20. And as long as you play fast, nobody cares. It's just a fun thing. And that's why I marvel at these great players that they can, you know, they can enjoy the round and be just like everybody else. But when it's the 30 seconds that it's time for them to lock in, hit their shot, they do it. And they do it better, obviously better than guys like me.
You mentioned about the desire to play every day if you could. And certainly this time of year, summertime, you have that opportunity. But that's got to be very different once the ball goes up in the air and the college basketball season starts. How do you balance? How much time are you able to play, you know, once the fall kicks in?
Not very much at all. And yeah. As I've gotten older, I've gotten a lot smarter on how I do it. So I used to just put the clubs up in late October or something and not play again until April or May. And what I do now is I take lessons during the wintertime. If I have a day where I'm at home, I book a lesson with my pro at Charlotte Country Club, Jack Fields. And I just, at one point, it was like right around the pandemic, I just decided, you know what, why am I paying a caddy to watch me play bad golf for 4 hours when I could pay my pro to make me better in one and then work on it a little bit afterwards? And so I spend the winter basically with my pro and trying to get better and hold things together over the winter time. And that's been a huge factor in getting better as a golfer. And honestly, Kelly, it's helped me enjoy the game more.
Yeah.
Like when you get better and you learn how to practice the right way and you learn how to self-diagnose, even at my low level, it makes the game way more fun. And so it's been worth every minute I've invested into trying to improve that way with a PGA pro that knows what he or she's doing.
Well, Jay, you strike me as a process-oriented guy from your years at Duke and so forth. And to be, as you said, to be able to learn from somebody who knows, that makes you better. Now you know how to practice better. There's a lot of what you just said that I think our listeners can really use, right? Have fun, yes, but have fun in a way that helps you get better at the game if you choose to.
Right. And I had a baseball coach when I was in high school that used to say, having fun is doing hard things well.
Yeah.
And golf is a hard thing. It everything about it is, and it's really hard to figure out. You're never going to do it. But for me, like I kind of had to let go of some of the arrogance, if you will, of thinking I was an athlete and I could figure it out on my own. So if things were going sideways for me at some point, I'd go see my pro, you know, maybe 15 years ago, I'd go get a lesson and then I would think, okay, I'm cured. But that's not the way it works. You know, I that wasn't the way it worked in basketball. I had a coach with me every day I was at practice and helping you. And so when I committed to that, and it's not a resource thing, because you spend the money you spend on going out to play, instead of playing an extra time during the week, I went and saw my pro. It was a force multiplier getting better. And, you know, like I probably put a new wing on my pro's house, with all the lessons I've taken, but it's been worth every penny and every second invested because I've enjoyed myself so much more. And then I've learned so much more. I learned how much I didn't know. And that was really, cause I didn't, there were a lot of things about it, Kelly, and I'm sorry to ramble here, but I didn't even know what the club could do. You know, there are certain aspects of the bounce of the club that I just didn't fully understand. I still don't, but at least I'm getting better at it.
So pleased to be joined by the great Jay Billis, college basketball analyst for ESPN here on Musings on Golf. Jay's putting his final touches, his final preps as he gets ready for the 36th American Century Celebrity Golf Championship this week at in Tahoe. Jay, in terms of the skill set demanded, are there similarities between being really good at basketball and being really good at golf?
Yeah, but golf is way harder. The one thing that golf is teaching me is to manage my emotions better. Like somehow when things weren't going well in basketball, I felt like I could adjust. and there's a physicality to it that you can throw some of your energy into, where that doesn't occur in golf. Like golf, you have to let go what just happened, whether it's positive or negative. And that's true in basketball too, but it's easier for me to do that in basketball. And, you know, Coach K used to have this thing, he called it next play, that whatever happened, you know, you had to condition your mind to make the next play because the game's too fast. And golf, you have a lot of time to think and in between shots. And I remember yeah. Curtis Strange one time, I'd written a book and I consulted Curtis Strange on it. And he asked me, he says, how long in a round of golf, if you shoot even par on a par 72 course, how long do you think it takes you to set up to the ball, put club to ball and make your swing? How long do you think the action of playing golf takes in a round of 72, you know, 70, par 72? And I said, you know, I guessed and I was wrong. He said, no, it's less than 5 minutes. And he goes, 5 minutes in a four hour round. He goes, that's a lot of time to screw yourself up mentally if you allow it. And I really thought about it, and it's true. And, you know, back to my point about, you know, you can have seven really good holes in a row and be playing well. And then all of a sudden you make a bad swing and blow one out of bounds. And you know, now all of a sudden you're despondent and you think it's going to happen again and all that. So the mental aspect of it is to me the difference that there's, maybe golf, the free throw is like one of the things, even though the conditions are the same all the time. Like free throws are way easier than a 5 foot putt. Because the conditions are different on 5 foot putts all the time. But there's no condition change in basketball. It's always the same. So it's kind of rote. But the similarity is that's the only time in a basketball game you're really forced to think, where it's not sort of instinctive action. And golf, like, you think all the time. And if you think too much, you can twist yourself in a pretty good knot.
Earlier this year, we had Dr. Bob Rotella, the terrific golf psychologist, on. He was fabulous, as you can imagine. He talked a lot about, you know, his work with Rory McIlroy. And there's no question that Rory, somehow, some way, winning that Masters title, all the ebbs and flows of that had a lot to do with Dr. Rotella and the approach. Even with that final round where DeChambeau said, you know, Rory didn't say anything to me. Well, it wasn't necessarily him being a you know what to DeChambeau. It was just the mode that Rotella told him, if you want to give yourself the best chance to win, this is what you need to do. So that's mental part. It's the biggest challenge in golf, is it not?
I think it is. And look, everybody's different with their personalities. Some people they're not going to say a word during a round because they're locked into what they're doing. And other people can be outgoing and gregarious and tell jokes. But the point is, I think, to Curtis Strange's point, when it's time to lock in and hit your shot, can you concentrate in that moment? And then when the moment's over, move on to the next thing. And instead of, for me, like, you know, I three putt some hole, and then I'm thinking about that while I'm setting up for my next tee shot. Like, what am I thinking about that? It's over. Whether I made the putt or three jacket, I got to hit this tee shot. And that's always been the challenge for me, and even now it is.
Tiger Woods gave a speech to some kids a number of years ago and told them about the 7 second rule, which for him means, right, if you have a bad hole, you hit a bad shot, yes, give yourself 7 seconds to do whatever, but not do whatever, but to you know, focus on what happened there. And after that 7 seconds, Jay, now you get the next shot. Now you got to focus on that, right?
Yeah, and it's a discipline. So my older brother, Dave, he's a great golfer. He's been a plus handicap basically his whole life. And we were playing one time, and I've never seen him get mad on a golf course, ever. Mm. And we were playing, and he blew one. He was playing at my club in Charlotte, and on the seventh hole, par five, he blew one out of bounds, right? And he just went, you know, kind of shrugged his shoulders and just teed another one up and hit it out there. And while we were walking up the fairway, I said, geez, you know, if I had just done that, I'd be upset. And he kind of laughed and he said, well, the difference between you and me is I know I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah.
And he's right. Like, I'd be thinking about, oh my God, I may do this again. He's like, yeah, bad swing. I'm not going to do that again.
It's a great, for him, that's a great place to be mentally, right? Oh my God.
Hey, to the American Century, pretty cool to have Steph Curry back this year. Obviously had a little something that preoccupied his time with the Summer Olympics last year. I'm wondering, is he the best shooter that you've ever seen?
Yes. And look, it's hard to really say that because, you know, whether it's Mark Price or Reggie Miller, or, you know, Jerry West, all these great shooters, you're talking about degrees of greatness. And it's almost reductive to the others to say one's better than the other. It's like if we said who's the best putter of all time, is it Ben Crenshaw or whatever? It gets to be kind of a silly exercise after a while. But he has changed the game in so many ways with the shots that he takes and makes. He has to be guarded all the time. I think the thing that people probably undervalue is the amount of movement that he undertakes in a game. He's got to run more than any player in the NBA. He's in constant motion and really hard to guard. But what a great human being he is. Like, his dad, Dell, is a friend. We're contemporaries and graduated college the same year. But just a fabulous family. And I know when he played in a pro tournament not very long ago, he didn't make the cut, but I think he shot a couple over par in a pro tournament. And I remember somebody asked Nick Faldo, maybe it was Jim Nantz, asked Nick Faldo about it. He says, you know, it was respectable. And I'm like, respectable? Like, how many PGA Tour pros are playing an NBA game and, you know, scored 10 points? Like, that was remarkable what he did. Just an incredible athlete.
You mentioned earlier about growing up in Southern California. I'm wondering, how did an LA kid who could have gone sort of down the street and played at the hallowed halls of Pauley Pavilion end up going across the country and play at Duke and for Coach K?
It was because of Coach K, Kelly. Like, yeah. when my high school coach, we did not have a great relationship. It was just a difficult thing. And I think it happened with all of my teammates too. But when I was choosing where to go to college, I was really choosing a coach. Like, I even at age 17, 18, I realized that was probably the only time in my basketball life I was going to get to choose who I played for. And I wasn't going to make a mistake there. And so it really came down to Coach K, Lute Olson, Jim Boeheim, and then Ted Owens, who was at Kansas at that time. Lute Olson was at Iowa. And the schools, like the type of schools and where they were located, didn't make any sense. But the quality of coach did. And Coach K was the least well-known, the least successful at that point. And I just trusted that he was the guy for me. And I think it turned out to be right. Would have been a great plan for any of those four. But I know I made the right decision.
So that's what it was with Mike, was the trust that you had more than anything else.
Yeah, and it's hard for me to put my finger on, like, when you just instinctively say, this is the guy, this is the one, because he was unfailingly honest. He answered every question that I had. He knew everything about me and my situation, my family, and you name it, and very forward thinking. And it was just, you're kind of thinking, you know, if I've got to put my future in somebody's hands, I want it to be in his. Not that I didn't want it to be in somebody else's, but like, this is the guy I want to play for. And I honestly never look back. And when I think about it now as a 61-year-old, like, I've had him as my coach for 44, 45 years, something crazy like that. Cause I committed to him in 1981 and that's a long time ago. And he's been a mentor and a friend for all that time period.
I was wondering about that. Do you still lean on coach at times? Talk to him?
Hey, all the time.
Mike, what I'm thinking about this, et cetera.
Yeah, I talked to him quite a bit. And you know, I probably talked to him more than I would have otherwise because of the business that I'm in basketball. So that's been a wonderful thing. You know, but the one thing about Coach K, Kelly, is like, he never tells you what to do. So if I were to call up and say, and I have, and ask for advice, he's got a great way about making you ask yourself the right questions so that you reach the right decision. You know, he's not saying, okay, well, here's what you just told me, so here's what I think you should do. He doesn't do that. He'll ask you, he'll get you to a place where you're asking yourself the right questions and you get the right answer. And he's really good at framing those things and getting you to the right place.
Jay, you mentioned earlier about playing basketball professionally overseas. So when you came out of Duke, you were drafted fifth round, Dallas Mavericks in '86. Why? Why the decision to forego a potential NBA career and play overseas?
That was my level, Kelly. Like it was kind of a thing where, like, I think I could have made an NBA team, but I don't think I would have been a long term NBA player. I was a good player, but I wasn't a great player. And when you get to that level, you're going, man, these guys are different. And it's the highest level. And I played at the second highest level. Italy was the best place in the world to play outside of the NBA at that time. And I loved it. And it was an interesting sort of journey for me because I was a star in high school. And then I was a good player in college. And then I got to be a star again when I was in Italy and a leading scorer, one of the league's leading scorers. And it was fun to do that again. So I really enjoyed it. But after 3 years of it, Coach K offered me a coaching job. And I thought, you know, I should probably take this. And I went to law school and I had kind of proven what I wanted to myself. And I wasn't sure that playing 10 or 12 years professionally overseas was going to put me in the position I wanted to be in long term. I loved playing and I hated giving that part of it up. But there were other things I wanted to do. And I thought coaching was one of them.
We're in our closing holes with the great Jay Billis here on Musings on Golf. So, Jay, you got your law degree at Duke. How do you balance that? How do you balance a law career as an attorney with the work you're doing at ESPN?
Well, I don't anymore. I'm still with my law firm, and I'm still licensed to practice, but my designation now is of counsel, which is a nice way of saying I don't do as much as I used to.
Yeah.
But when I went into the practice of law expecting to do that and only that. I had committed to that. Broadcasting kind of came to me, if you will. Like I got an offer to start doing games on the radio and I thought it'll be fun, you know, get me out of the office a little bit. But I was not going to let that affect my main gig, which was being a full-time litigation attorney. And, but I started getting TV games and doing more and more games, and the balance that you're talking about became really difficult. I was in the office all the time, or I was on the road doing games, and, it just became too burdensome and I had to choose. And I decided to give broadcasting my full attention, and it's worked out okay. But I did not go into my law practice thinking that I was going to have any sort of distraction. I was going to commit. I committed to that fully. Something pulled me out of it.
Now, when you were a full-time litigation attorney, can you please chat a little bit about a case involving Barney the Dinosaur that you were very much a part of? I would not have expected to put Jay Billis and Barney the Dinosaur in the same sentence. However, please explain.
Yeah, well, when I was practicing full-time I did litigation. It's basically being a trial lawyer, and we had a lot of great cases representing companies, you name it. And one case walked through the door. It was a costume manufacturer that was being sued by the for trademark and copyright infringement by Barney the Purple Dinosaur, the company that owned the rights to Barney. And we tried to settle the case right away because the costumes that our client were selling looked like Barney. And we thought, you know, that the Lions Partnership was the name of the company. They had to protect their trademark copyright. They were doing this all over the country, but they decided they wanted to make an example out of our client so they wouldn't settle. So we had to go to trial. So in federal court in the Western District of North Carolina, I had to argue a trademark and copyright case about Barney the Purple Dinosaur. And I had to subpoena Barney to the trial. I mean, it was really, there was a lot of it that was really funny and kind of ridiculous. And then the case went to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, and I had to argue before a three-judge panel at the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals about Barney the Purple Dinosaur. Still kind of, in one hand, it's like it was really funny, and we won at the trial level. We expected to lose, and we won. And then we won some and lost some on appeal, and we wound up settling the whole thing after the appeal. But it still kind of follows me around to this day.
That's funny. All right. One basketball question, two golf questions. I'll let you go. First of all, if you would kind of peer into your crystal ball, give me a sense of maybe four teams that should have, you know, a really good shot at making the Final Four come next spring in Indianapolis.
I think Purdue would be up among those teams. Matt Painter's done an amazing job of retaining talent there. They don't really go into the transfer market like a lot of other schools do. They do have some, but it's not their main staple. And I think Purdue is going to be really good. I think both Houston and Florida are going to be right there again. And I think Duke, because of the talent level they have coming in, will be right there. But one of the really great things about basketball right now is we don't know. If you had asked me the same question last year, Florida would not have been in the top four or five for me, would have been further down the list. And they turned out after about 10 games, you're going, man, they're legit.
Yeah.
So we're going to find out more after the first 10 games. To me, that's kind of exciting. I like that. 20 years ago, when the buzzer went off at the Final Four, we kind of knew who was going to be good the next year. And now we have to watch it evolve a little bit. And I kind of like that.
Golf question, whether it's the American Century, a moment that happened there, or just a very cool moment somewhere else. What's the best moment, if you will? What's the shot you hit or the moment you experienced in golf that stands out and you say, wow, that's what makes this game so darn cool for me?
You know, even though it's kind of a lucky shot, making a hole in one is really different. Like, I've had a couple lucky kind of eagles where, you know, on a par four, you bounce your second shot in or something. And
yeah,
and that's pretty cool. But I realize at my level of golf, that's luck more than anything. I just did it right one time. But I had a hole in one last September at Pine Valley on the 14th hole. And my friends I was playing with went nuts, and I was kind of stunned. And then playing behind us was Annika Sorenstam, and playing in the group up front of us with Harold Varner. And so when we finished, it was kind of nice to ask them, how'd you guys do on 14? Because they heard my friends jumping all over the place. So that was really, really fun moment.
That's cool. The one time when you can one up with Annika and Harold, huh?
The only time.
The only time. Right. Exactly. Hey, final question, Jay, and one that I you know, get the pleasure of asking all of our guests, and that is, if you could have sort of a dream foursome, if you could add three others, whether they're living or deceased, who would those three be, and where would you play kind of that magical round of golf?
Yeah, I would probably go with my dad, my brother, and my son. My son's 28 now, and he's starting to get into golf, and just that kind of thing with your family would be the one. But I love playing with everybody. There's not a time I don't enjoy playing with someone. And that's sort of the beauty of it is you probably get to know people better playing a round of golf than you could doing anything else. And you certainly get to know everybody's temperament while you're doing it. But it would be my dad, my brother, my son.
And where would you play?
Pine Valley. Yeah, I that's my favorite golf course on the planet.
Actually, one final question relates to the American Century. How's your game right now going in this week? And what are your realistic expectations over the 3 days of the Stableford competition?
Well, I mean, the thing for me is just to avoid making doubles. And, you know, like you have a couple doubles or something like that, it tends to really screw up your score. But really my goal is to, one, to enjoy myself and just have fun. But I think at my level of play, I can get 10 points a day. But sometimes, like when you're rolling or something like that, and you feel like you're playing well and you might try to do too much, and, you know, all of a sudden you put yourself in the position of making a double, and that, you know, that's so deflating. And, so that's kind of my goal is to, if I do hit a bad shot, which I will, or put a double on the board or whatever, to let it go and just not turn one into two. Because sometimes you do that and you're trying to make up for it and you wind up making a mistake doing that. So just try to, you know, stay in the moment and just hit the shot in front of me and not worry about what's coming up or what just happened.
Hey, Bill, let's let it go. Have a lot of fun this week. Thanks so much. Your time and your thoughts for joining us here on Musings on Golf.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's an honor to be with you. Thank you.
At William & Harry Golf, comfort meets purpose. Through their care campaign, William & Harry is partnering with charities to give back.
donating a portion of every qualifying sale to support your cause. Enhance your next fundraiser with William & Harry customized golf shoes, auction packages, or exclusive giveaways. Crafted from fine deer skin, calf skin, and exotic leathers, William & Harry golf shoes offer all-day comfort from the course to the clubhouse in vibrant, eye-catching colors. Learn more at williamandharry.com or email info@williamandharry.com. William & Harry, style with a mission. Well, as I said, going into that interview, Jay's a very multifaceted guy. You know, he is super sharp, as I think you discerned from that interview. If you didn't know that already from his work on ESPN. I want Jay Billis, by the way, representing me on the business side if I'm involved in litigation. He is an absolute go-to and someone who is extremely well-read, extreme in terms of presenting a case. He's right up there with the top ones that I could imagine in terms of an attorney. Brian Campbell wins for the second time on the PGA Tour this year. And you've got other multiple winners, including Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy. You didn't expect it to be Brian Campbell. Now, I will say this. There's a little bit of good fortune there. I mean, Brian won the event in Mexico. His ball looked like it was going to go out of bounds in a playoff against Aldrich Pottgeter. Somehow, miraculously, came back in bounds. He took advantage of that in the playoff, made birdie, and won. And then he won the John Deere Classic in a one-hole playoff over Emiliano Grillo. Two events that are not, I wouldn't say satellite events. That's not fair at all. But they're not events that have top fields in it. So I don't know that you can compare him winning twice to the Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler, and so forth, winning multiple events. Sepp Straka, throw him in there as well. There's something, the intangibles about Campbell, for goodness sakes, he's the shortest hitter on the PGA Tour. He averages, 277 yards off the tee. So very clearly, there's a lot of moxie, kind of to use an old term, with him. Great iron player, terrific short game, terrific putter. Has to be. I mean, Pottgeter, as an example, is the longest driver on tour. Averages 327 yards. It's roughly a 50-yard difference off the tee between those two. And yet, Campbell, twice in the winner's circle, and you have to consider him for the Ryder Cup. You have to. I don't know if his short game off the tee works well in match play, but we'll see. Let's see how things play out. But at least for a second week in 2025, for a guy who had his card in 2016, and then injuries, illnesses, etc. He lost his card, played a lot on the Korn Ferry Tour, wondered if he'd ever get back on tour, period, much less win twice, got his card this year, and he's won two times. Let's hear from Brian Campbell what this means to be a multiple winner, an improbable multiple winner on the PGA Tour in 25.
How I approach most weeks is there's things that I can control and things that I can't control, and the best thing I can do is give myself as many looks as I can, and I was doing that. And so I think there were definitely moments in the week where I was thinking about, hey, you know, this could be a special week. I don't know if I like to let myself get ahead of myself and think about winning all that much, but I know if we stick around and keep doing the right things that we're going to be there in the end.
So, yeah, like I said, I think for Campbell, it's really going to be interesting over the next 6 weeks through the Open Championship and then the FedEx Cup playoff events, how he plays. If he continues to trend upward, if he's outside of the six automatic qualifiers for the U.S. Team for the Ryder Cup, that's going to be at Bethpage Black in late September. Does Keegan Bradley take him with a pick? Going to be fascinating to see. Okay. You know, if you look at the Genesis Scottish Open playing this week, the last 2 years, a great shot that Rory McIlroy hit against the wind in 2023 to what 15 feet or so to wrap it up and win that event and really kind of dash the hopes of Robert McIntyre from winning his country's national championship. Great stuff there. And then a year later, last year, McIntyre comes back and I think really kind of put himself on the world stage as far as golf is concerned. He wins his national title. He got a great field this week. 8 of the top 10 world golf ranked players are there as they start to tune up for the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. And speaking of, our guest next week is someone who, while he never played in Northern Ireland during his years winning Open Championships, Lee Trevino certainly knew how to win in the elements over there. Won the Open Championship, or the British Open, as I still like to call it, twice. And I've known Lee for a long, long time, actually caddied for him in the Ryder Cup in 1979. And really, really looking forward to spending time with Lee as we preview this coming Open Championship and also look back at the marvels, the things that he pulled off when he won his two British Opens. Lee Trevino, from an interviewer standpoint, is classic because you just ask him a question, and then 10 minutes later, after he's given you a fabulous answer and gone deep into it, you ask the next question. You just ask it, get out of the way, and let the likes of Lee Trevino have fun and educate you. Enjoyed this very much. Again, we thank Jay Billis. We wish him all the best at the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship. It'll be on both Peacock and NBC Sports throughout the weekend. Please check it out. It's a fabulous, fun event, and really puts you in the mood for two big weeks of golf coming up with that and with the Open Championship next week. For my good buddy Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin, signing off, always trying to keep it down the middle and no more than two putts into the hole. Thanks for joining us here on Musings on Golf.